you're all set. Okay, good. So, so I'm pleased to introduce Deborah Linton, who's for the past 7 years has been applying collaborative technology to healthcare. She currently works for the Center of Connected Health, where she's applying mind and body medicine. I'm curious what that's going to be, but mind and body medicine for delivery in a virtual world. As an undergraduate, she had a social and political perspective. She got that from the local youth in such places as India, Nepal, and Vietnam. She has a BA in international relations from Oxford College. She'll tell you more about what she's talking about. You see the title there. So let's give her a round.
Okay. Hey, guys. Thank you. Sorry, I'm just setting the rest of this up. Okay. So thank you all for having me here. I really appreciate the time. As you know, I'm from the Center of Connected Health, which is a part of the Partners Healthcare Consortium. This is a collaborative project. What we ended up doing is taking an existing practice of care and translating it into a virtual environment. We happened to choose Second Life, but obviously there are plenty of other virtual environments out there, but we can go into why we chose Second Life, why we chose the relaxation response, and why we chose to collaborate with everyone. So this is a collaboration between the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine and the Center for Connected Health, as well as the Department for Neurology. Now, although we're not the first people to bring a form of healthcare into a virtual space, or even Second Life, the reason why this particular project was significant was because Partners does bring a degree of credibility and legitimacy to a space that is struggling for just that. Again, we learned a lot from the people that were already doing work in this space, and we'll go over some of the existing projects, but we hope that our efforts have sort of proven that this work can be done and should be explored. So these are two sites that are relatively important. SL Healthy is a place where a lot of the health-related work within Second Life is being documented, blogged, wikied, and Cyber Health Map is a wonderful inventory of health-related activities that have been published in poster format or in actual article format. So there's a degree of peer review that happens there. And that's not just with virtual health-related resources, that's also with online resources. So we chose to focus on Second Life for a variety of reasons. The first one was that they have a publicly available scripting language. I'm hesitant to use the term open source, but it is an important aspect of why we opted for Second Life over other platforms such as Wonderland or their.com. The other piece is that anything that you create in this space, the intellectual property remains with its creator. And we could talk a little bit more about the legality of that further along in the presentation, but that's very popular within healthcare these days because clinicians generally don't like to play by the rules of insurers and pay providers. So any opportunity to maintain intellectual property, there's a lot of enthusiasm around. So, and with that characteristic also comes a massive amount of user-created content. There's a lot in this space that has already been created. I'm assuming that most of you are familiar with Second Life, but everything in that space, with the exception of the given terrain and a few freebie pieces of clothing and textures, has been created by its users. So it's not a world created by wonderful game developers like you, but it has a unique flavor of many different minds all working to build it out. And then also size and popularity. I think the last number that we were able to find on the registered avatars was 15 million registered avatars. Now, there are less day-to-day users, but the size and popularity of this particular platform was what really attracted us, because there's work already being done in this space. It also has its own markets and economies. I'm sure you've seen some articles somewhere outlining, you know, the first millionaire in Second Life, and there's a conversion rate. And what this means for the healthcare world is that we have the opportunity, at least in the future, there's a potential to experiment with different payer models. So, users are already actively pursuing health-related activities in this space, and we can talk about some of the communities that have developed organically and that we had an opportunity to learn from as we developed this project. So now, with that said, there are some challenges to working within Second Life. As with any platform, there's a learning curve. I would imagine that most of your time is game developers is spent trying to develop intuitive scripts, programs, textures, user interfaces, something that, you know, people can just pick up and get. And Second Life, in an effort, or Linden Labs, in an effort to maintain, I think, an extreme degree of creative flexibility, has a UI that's sometimes challenging for people to get into. We're talking maybe about 3 to 5 days of just sort of tinkering with it before people are really getting into that space and feeling like they can accurately represent themselves and really get into it. So that was something, when we kind of get into recruiting, that we had to address. Demands on hardware, again, I'm sure this is an issue that a lot of you think about at different points in time, which is, you know, depending on somebody's video card, depending on their internet connection, they're going to have a completely different experience. And when we're delivering a healthcare service, we need to be able to guarantee what kind of care they'll be given. So that's something that we really had to build for from the start, and to take into consideration that variability. So. And here we can just sort of see the progression of video cards. Obviously, the far stage left would be somebody that doesn't have a great video card, and far stage right is, you know, somebody that has a great video card and, you know, can really experience that grade A wind light sunset. So the health activities that already exist in this space are broad, but they all generally have a common theme, which is that they're trying to help patients and healthcare providers gain not only information but a sense of control over specific conditions that they have, letting patients be their own expert for each other. You know, that they probably have more information on what it means to be a stroke survivor in some cases than your given clinician, and giving people the opportunity to reach out to other patients that have similar situations is what this space has been used for in a really unique capacity. A lot of this is distance learning, which virtual environments really lend themselves to. We'll start off with Health Info Ed Island. So just to quick time out, what I hope to do is to provide a brief overview of the activities within Second Life, and then sort of talk about our specific project. I'm not going to claim to know what it means to be a game developer, but I'm hoping that maybe we can find some intersection between your activities and the specific things that we've sort of learned from doing this project. So maybe we can address some of that in the Q&A. So Health Info at Island, this isn't us, but this is an NIH-funded space. It started off from a health library island before it got the fancy NIH funding. So the reason why this is different from your average website or database is that this can be a collaborative, inclusive, and immersive resource. So you can have somebody standing right next to you, also in avatar form, learning about your disorder or injury along with you. And it becomes a different type of tool at that point. Oh, and it's important to note that within Health Info at Island, there are calls to not just virtual resources, but also other online resources. So the integration of existing resources on the web and this virtual technology is something that makes this platform particularly unique and effective for applying or delivering care. The Dr. Ann Buchanan Medical Center, so I don't know if you guys know this, but the in Second Life, you kind of take what you can get when it comes to last names, and you get to pick your first name. So, but she chose Ann Myers, but it's actually Dr. Ann Buchanan, so if you're looking her up, it might make it a little bit easier. But she created this medical center where clinicians and medical students from around the country and world can come and exchange notes and share experiences. A lot of times when med students are going through the process of learning how to become doctors, they'll do note rotations where, you know, they won't go to every class, but they'll send a representative, they'll take notes, and then share it amongst each other. So, you know, you're not stuck going to every single biochem course before the massive exam. But what they can do here in this virtual space is compare notes across institutions. So that's pretty unique, and they're also able to tutor each other, and because it's a more immersive environment, you not only have the opportunity to exchange existing online resources, but you know, you also have the chance to get to know fellow medical students within your global class, at least. So this is pretty cool. Okay, so the CDC started off with a relatively dinky kiosk, and they've recently upgraded to having their own I believe it's their own island, but it's a pretty substantial plot of land at this point. And what we can see here is that they're doing much more public outreach. And this is a complimentary biohazard suit that you can receive if you fill out an online survey for them. So I thought that that was kind of cool. But they have a lot of educational resources and, again, are using this space in innovative ways to experiment with various types of disaster preparedness that you might not be able to do in the real world. So, Second Health. So Second Health has been put together by quite a few minds over at the Imperial College in the UK. It's either the Imperial College or Plymouth University. But I can look that up. I have that over there. But what we're seeing here is that they've pulled resources from their angiography database, and so these are real health-related images that they're going over in a virtual space. So what medical students can do is that they can come in, stage a rotation, they can go through this process before ever having stepped on the floor of their first few rotations, which is a pretty interesting tool to offer because a lot of these medical students are very nervous about their first set of rotations. So down in the corner, we can sort of see a model of their weight center, and they've essentially created a whole hospital, buildings, rooms, and all. So you can imagine that if you're teaching somebody what type of physical rehabilitation program to go through, you know, you go to this machine, you do this many reps, and you can move on to the next one. The top corner image is, I think, probably the most interesting. They've created an operating theater, which is rigged with all of these different sensors. So when your avatar walks in along with your fellow medical student avatars, and the attending, all this information is fired at you. And this is a much more relaxed environment than your first visit and your first rotation in the OR. So it's important that these medical students are given the opportunity to sort of make that less intelligent mistake in a simulated environment as opposed to the real world environment. So for example, if you're touching a sterile field and you haven't gone through, and your avatar hasn't gone through the right sterilization process, scrub process, all of these alarms will sound, and you'll be told specific instructions and specifically how you messed up and totally compromised the entire OR before, well, doing it in the real world. So, and as we learned from James Kinross, who was showing us this space, it really does yell at you if you mess up. So, and I have more information about the people that have created this, so if any of you are interested after, I can help you find that. So Polymer West, this has been built in conjunction with Cisco. They have created an entire hospital that is scheduled to be complete in construction by, I think it's 2011. So this hospital is just currently being built, but it has given patients the opportunity to sort of see what their traditional tracks of care may be in this new environment. So you're used to going and getting your regular checkup. You go to this room on this floor in this building. Well, now at this new hospital, all of that's going to change. So much as you can kind of pull up a Google map, get a satellite image of that restaurant you're trying to go to, and really get a good idea of what it looks like before showing up, you can do this in a virtual space. And this, in conjunction with, again, existing technology, for example, RFID tagging, it's provided the designers of this hospital the opportunity to sort of track patient flow and patient workflow, given the existing patterns of movement in their previous hospitals. So, again, the opportunity to combine existing technologies with this new platform. So, this is my favorite, virtual hallucinations. You can sort of see by the images, this is one of the more, it's an earlier project, it's a little bit lo-fi, the textures aren't as great, but this is a perfect example of how this space is unique in that the most important thing and the most compelling thing in this space is the application of innovative ideas. So on this particular plot of land, you can, and this was built by certified clinicians, so you can experience what various types of psychosis might be like. So if you or a loved one is trying to understand a particular diagnosis, this experience can really help, and it sounds strange, but there's a warning before you go into this space because it tags your avatar with a heads-up display and like a little device that will project voices through your computer, and it's laughable at first, but as you move through this this environment, and the floor is dropping out beneath you, that's what we can sort of see in this space right here. These voices are just constantly chattering at you, and it was something that I didn't really... I'd learned about various types of psychosis before, but I hadn't really taken into account just how disturbing different aspects of that might be, so it really brought a new learning element to an otherwise simple remote educational resource. So the actual provision of care. So I work with the Center for Connected Health. Our model is based on providing care to patients in the right space at the right time. We use commercial technologies and online resources to provide or to connect leading clinicians in the field with patients in their home, in their office, and all around the world or wherever they happen to find themselves. We use sensors to monitor step count data, weight loss data, hypertension, and glucose levels all remotely, and then integrate them with traditional forms of care, so bringing them into the actual mainstream at Mass General Hospital and within Partners Healthcare. And Partners is owns pretty much the Brigham and Women's Hospital, the MGH, and the Dana-Farber Institute. And again, if you're interested in learning a little bit more about Partners, I can explain that a little bit later. But and Dan Hoke, who's the PI in all of this, Dr. Dan Hoke over at the Massachusetts General Hospital in the Department of Neurology, he's the one that that really brought everybody together from the Benson Henry Institute of Mind-Body Medicine, the Center for Connected Health, and a few people from the Department of Neurology. So he really fostered this this collaboration, which has allowed us to actually deliver care in this space. So, and we can talk a little bit more about, I think, the Benson Henry Institute when we go into the relaxation response, but the role of users in this space was something that that Dan really honed in on. So within Second Life, as I mentioned before, there are plenty of people that are already providing sort of almost organic forms of cognitive rehab for each other. Dan was an integral part in establishing an online bulletin board community before the days of WebMD for stroke survivors and people that have suffered other neurological injuries. He focuses mostly on epilepsy patients, so he's always encouraging patients to reach out to each other and support each other. And the bulletin boards were one way where this really happened. And a few of the people from the bulletin boards really took to this new virtual space, which we hadn't really learned about. So it was through them that we really first became acquainted with this space. We noticed some of the same patterns that we were seeing on the bulletin boards, which is a lot of self-organization and organic growth of cognitive rehab. So, which brings us to Dreams Island. If there is one place that I could ask you guys to go and look into and learn a little bit more about, it would be Dreams Island. The community there is fantastic, very welcoming, and will teach you all that you need to know. So if the Second Life tutorial ever gets boring, just teleport straight there. So the Dreams community, having come out of the bulletin board community and others, started to grow. And every year they put on different events like a Dreams Community Fair, and these are all stroke survivors. So in the real world, some of these individuals, they can't walk, they have difficulty communicating, some have vision problems. But in this space, it's a relatively level playing field, and what we started to see was that they were challenging each other and developing really unique forms of interaction, which there's a growing body of literature that supports that patients challenging each other is an essential part to recovering from neurological injuries. So when we started learning more and more about Dreams Island, we were becoming increasingly excited. So not only do they sort of have fun events, but they also have a lot of educational resources and just a very, again, welcoming community. So one of the more unique aspects of this community is that they, as I mentioned before, they challenge each other. So speed builds are a good example of this. A speed build is a small competition. They have these all the time, maybe like two or three times a week, and they do get a little competitive, but they're fun. Participants are asked to build something within a specific theme within a very short period of time out of these geometric primitives, so just the shapes that you have and you can manipulate in Second Life. And they have something like, you know, a half hour to 2 hours to build something related to hopping. And, you know, so I think, I'm not sure if that was the theme with this one, but you know, we kind of have a rabbit over here, we have a spring over there, and you start to see some of these very abstract solutions to a relatively basic theme. And what you start to realize is that this this form of competition is really a type of organic and legitimate form of cognitive rehab. So anyways, and you know, after these competitions are done, they get judged by the community, and it's not necessarily the best or most detailed design that wins. It's often the most creative and abstract. So, again, the most useful application of this space is really bringing to life ideas that wouldn't be possible with other platforms. So, talked a little bit about the Center for Connected Health. I'd like to sort of move into the piece of the presentation where I'm talking more about our specific research. Feel free to jump in at any time with questions. I'm still new at this presenting things. So yeah, feel free to interrupt. So we decided to teach the relaxation response within this space. We were really blown away by what was happening already, and particularly with the Dreams community, and we sort of thought, or Dan Hoke really thought, you know, what is what other types of interventions can we do in this space? Are there other forms of cognitive interventions and behavioral interventions that we could do? Around the same time that Dr. Hoke was getting to know some of my colleagues over at the Center for Connected Health, he was also becoming increasingly involved at the Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine. And it was at that juncture that he realized that it might just be possible to teach mind-body medicine within this environment. So I just want to talk a little bit about the relaxation response with capital R's. So the Benson Henry Institute is based primarily on the work of Dr. Benson, and he started publishing and writing in the 60s and 70s, mostly based around transcendental meditation, and has provided a lot of the solid scientific background to what transcendental meditation, repetitive prayer, Sufi dancing, and just general other types of meditation has pioneered. And although what he was looking at, generally they had spiritual backgrounds. Not all of them had spiritual backgrounds. There was also, you know, the biofeedback response, which can trigger a similar type of altered physiological state. So what he learned from these practices was that there were a variety of techniques that would help you elicit the relaxation response. And the relaxation response is pretty much the opposite of the fight or flight response. So he looked at the fight or flight response, or, you know, that buzz that you get when you're in a high performance environment or in a state of danger. And he thought, well, you know, if you just flip this on your head, you can generate, you know, an equal and opposite tool to possibly be used in other forms of care. So what he has discovered with the relaxation response is that in triggering this, you open yourself up to increased learning, you open yourself up to increased creativity, and it really does help with facilitating existing programs of care. So in attempting to help people with actual medical problems, he has developed these 12 to 8-week long programs where people will come in and learn the relaxation response, you know, a variety of techniques, almost a menu of techniques, like a buffet of relaxation techniques from around the world. And participants are able to identify what particular techniques worked best for them and how to elicit the relaxation response in the right place at the right time in their own environments. So I think that's a good... Does anybody have any questions about the relaxation response itself? Okay. So in bringing the relaxation response into this space, we had a relatively small team, but a very active team at that. We had Marco Sinelli and myself working on the Second Life component, learning the scripting language, learning the animations, building out the space, and hopefully I'll be able to take you on a quick tour of the island. How am I doing for time? Okay. The domain expertise in the relaxation response came from the Benson Henry Institute and the clinicians over there, Margaret Baim and Mariola Milik. They have been excellent in teaching us what we need to know about the actual practice, and they've been very patient with us because we are sort of coming at it from a very technical angle, and they really kept us true to the practice itself. And project management, Heather Bellow, she was an integral part in surfing a lot of the bureaucratic challenges that come with using a completely new platform for a healthcare study. So, you know, we were often going to our internal review board, who has to approve all of our content, and explain to them that, you know, well, okay, well, we've been using word of mouth, we've been using traditional physical flyers, and, well, we have these things in Second Life called kiosks, and they're throwing out virtual note cards to people with information about our study. And our internal review board was, you know, naturally curious as to what the heck we were talking about. So she was excellent in working through a lot of that paperwork convincing. So, and she also kept us on track. I was hoping that she was going to be here today, but something came up. So, but research design, Alice Watson and Albert Young, and obviously the principal investigator, Dr. Hoke. So, so the methods. How did we actually bring this into this space? So we had a team of relaxation response experts. We had a sort of ragtag team of Second Life experts, a neurologist, and a project management team. You know, how do we make this work? So we did select an 8-week-long relaxation response taught course that was taught face-to-face. So one of the critical problems with the relaxation response, you know, as it is that you have to learn it face-to-face, which means that you have to drive into Boston, and then you have to sit in a relatively sterile room on cold metal chairs and then proceed to deal with Boston drivers after you've learned how to become very relaxed, and that's just not very relaxing. So we thought that this would be a wonderful opportunity and a real step in the evolution of this massive amount of research that Dr. Benson has already done if we were able to bring this into a space where remote learning can occur. So we developed an island that we own in Second Life. The Center for Connected Health has the Center for Connected Health Island. It should be public access, but if anybody's having problems, they can just shoot me an email and I'll make sure you can get on. It was important that we identified particular exercises and teachings from this face-to-face program that would readily lend themselves to this space. So we kind of had a formula for what we chose to adapt and what we chose to leave with the to leave within the hands of the clinician Margaret Bame, who, you know, every week would represent herself in this space through her avatar with these patients logging in from the Boston area. So a quick note on recruitment. Again, I don't know how much of this intersects with your ambitions or your interests, but I think that when it comes to using new online platforms, it's always important to think about what are the existing rules and regulations around traditional practices and how these tools might be used. So what we initially wanted to do was to recruit from around the world. There were many people that were very interested in learning about the relaxation response and participating in the study, but what we found from our internal review board, fair enough, we had to do all of the consent in a face-to-face session. We had to get their physical signature. There are ways to obtain remote forms of consent, but none of them have anything to do with Second Life or innovative virtual platforms. So that's hopefully a future step, and I do see an opportunity for growth in this area, but that's the role of proof of concept studies. So, face-to-face consent. We also learned that a lot of the tools used to validate the relaxation response itself, to, you know, prove medically, does this work, how can it help actual patients as an add-on cognitive behavioral therapy, that a lot of those surveys were only designed to be given in a face-to-face exchange, so we couldn't use that tool in this environment because it hasn't been proven well yet. So we did a survey at the beginning of the study and at the end of the study. So, and it wasn't just one survey, there were like 8 different surveys that we ended up using. So we're still in the process of analyzing results, but the trends do look like we've actually accomplished something. So I'm sure to let you guys know when we publish. So in terms of logistics, we had biweekly meetings. This allowed us to, you know, share our respective domains of knowledge. It allowed for ultimately greater usability and preserved the authenticity of the clinical practice. As I mentioned before, I think each party really came in with their own vision of how this project might look in the end, and it was definitely a learning experience for everybody to learn from each other. So continuing to meet on a regular basis really helped that, and you know, face-to-face meetings as well as virtual meetings, you know, getting participants even on the Second Life team, you know, used to functioning, communicating, and interacting within this space. By sort of dividing labor in this way, we were at the same time able to explore the capability of this technology. So the Second Life team, you know, we ended up spending a lot of time, you know, working on the scripts, the animation, the build, really, you know, obviously relied upon the clinicians to, you know, make sure that we were doing justice to the relaxation response itself. So that was a good example of teamwork. And it just gave us the opportunity to really see what would work in this space and what wouldn't. So this was an interesting challenge. We didn't want to overdevelop the environment with the technology. If you've had a chance to play around with Second Life, again, I'm sure to what you guys are used to dealing with, it might be a little bit lo-fi, but you're really able to create anything that you can think of. It might be painful, but it is possible. So we didn't want to get overambitious, and we also wanted to make sure that we weren't providing any preconceived notions of what should otherwise be a self-initiated practice. A large piece of the relaxation response, and again, preserving that of the authenticity of the relaxation response, was allowing participants to learn how to go on guided meditation and how to have positive visualization. And I can provide a few more resources on that after, but it was important that we didn't just sort of go hog wild with the technology and end up boxing out the actual content of this clinical practice. So having balance in that respect was important and sometimes challenging, because I think that, you know, the programming team, Marco Sinelli and myself, we kind of rolled up to the meetings and thought, hey, you know, well, why just have a normal meditative labyrinth? Why not build a labyrinth in the sky and people can fly around in it? And really that wouldn't have been an accurate translation of the practice itself. So throttling back some of the creative ambitions to preserve the legitimacy of what is actually taught. In order to encourage group exchange, we did a few things. A large part of the relaxation response is allowing the group to interact with itself. It's not just sort of a top-down educational model. It's not just PEG monologuing the entire time. There's a lot of question asking and group conversations. So we wanted to make sure that participants all had creation privileges. Some took advantage of this. Most didn't. It was really interesting to see how they used these privileges. We also gave them 24-hour access to promote the idea that the virtual space itself was a resource. So this is one of the things that we learned from the informal conversations that we had at the end of the study, which is a lot of these participants ended up using the space as a calming tool. We had one woman that would go every morning as she was checking her email, and she wouldn't really do anything on the island, but she would, you know, on one screen have her avatar just hovering above the island, and on the other screen she'd be going through email, which for her was the most stressful part of her day, and that there was a sense of peace that brought her. And I think a lot of that had to do with all that she and her respective group were creating in this space, whether it was learning how to meditate or go on guided meditations in their mind's eye, they were contributing a lot to this space. So even though some of the participants weren't creating physical or, you know, virtual objects, there was a lot being dropped into this environment, which I think then became a resource itself. So, and the other sort of important piece was that we acknowledged group text chat as a form of legitimate communication. There's a real culture to this space that we had to work within. Margaret Baim had a microphone that she would speak into, as would all of the participants, but a lot of the questions, particularly the personal questions, or the questions that participants may have had a harder time vocalizing, they would type it out in a little group text log, and you know the text would appear at the bottom of everybody's screen, and some would even just send her a private IM in the middle of her lecture, and she would be able to casually and subtly address a concern or problem that may have just been lost in a face-to-face interaction where, you know, you're concerned about what the person sitting next to you may think if you ask a question. So that was a unique way in which this platform was able to add a level of communication that otherwise wouldn't have been possible. So so to sort of talk about the programming aspects of this, the program that we used for animating, for example, we had a few yoga animations. So, you know, if you wanted to learn how to do the mountain pose or the tree pose, your avatar would go and actually bust a yoga move. So the program that we wanted to use was QAvimator, but that's in the early alpha stage, which is just kind of like a nice way of saying, if it works, that's great, but if it doesn't, not our problem. These are publicly available open source programs originally created by Vinay Plume, or Vince Invincible, that's his avatar name. And it's a relatively basic program. It works most of the time, but again, there are limitations, so that was a point of frustration. And to be honest, we really didn't have much of a budget devoted to building these aspects of the program. We kind of had two people working on this, and what we could accomplish, but you know, we were learning all of these languages on the fly from wikis and just other online public resources, so that was a unique experience. So scripting, Marco Sinelli did a majority of the scripting of the heads-up display and really developing that user interface. So, and he learned most of it from the Second Life wiki. So the Linden scripting language is something that's completely unique to Linden. One of the challenges of this is that all of the variables within this language are specific almost entirely to Second Life. So it's not like there are other reference points. So bringing any outside information into this space can be a challenge. And there's a real art to, I think, building an effective application within this space. So, now we can sort of get into some of the legality and branding issues. And I'm hoping that you guys might find this a little bit more pertinent to what you're doing. In terms of using open source technology for legitimate healthcare purposes, these are things that we needed to think about from the get-go. There was sort of an issue around what we ended up creating, because it was a little bit different than what we initially envisioned. So as we've been working with our with the Partners Healthcare legal teams, some of the questions that came up were, you know, well, what did we end up creating? Was it an experience? Is it a new tool? Is it a product? Or is it, you know, just the promotion of the existing brands through the departments, like the Center for Connected Health, the Benson Henry Institute? Are we just developing new ways to deliver the content, and the content is the most important thing to copyright and brand? The reason why I bring this up is that it's really important to start building for these issues from the get-go, and asking yourself these questions as you go through the building process, you know, every day, like how can we manage the content that we're bringing into a new space with a new technology? So the approaches that we used with our work is that we manage access to the island. So, for example, to maintain patient confidentiality. Whenever we had groups going through this 8-week-long session, you had to have specific access codes to get onto the island itself. And then that way, you know, a stranger won't wander by and interrupt somebody's guided meditation. You know, again, the issues around identity, you know, how do we preserve patient confidentiality on a variety of fronts? That was definitely something to think about and took a lot of our time in the very beginning. So we also manage the relaxation response content itself. The Benson Henry Institute, this is their bread and butter. They've copyrighted the heck out of this, so we weren't too concerned about losing control of the relaxation response content itself, but it was important to manage how that content may or may not be reproduced in this environment. You know, copy paste. You know, you're transmitting something that costs $15, $45, $90 to your friend who just happens to be online. So when you're dealing with teaching affiliates of Harvard Medical School and Partners Healthcare, these are really important things to think about. So one of the things that we did when it came to managing the content was that we developed these heads-up displays, which allowed all of the content to sit in a confined space, device that we could control the replication of. So, you know, we could give it to our research participants, but they couldn't give it to anybody else. Now, there are certainly ways around everything, but this was one of the things that was important to build into the model itself. So we also were careful about media hosting and the media that we actually use. There are a few videos and other online resources that are referenced in the real-world relaxation response classes, so making sure that anything that we brought into this space was sitting on a partners-approved server and that we owned the content completely. So, because you'd be surprised how much even the smallest video costs. So, and then also transparency. We were very honest with our collaborators from the get-go about what we were doing, where our concerns were. So the more you can be honest about what you know and what you don't know in creating or bringing content into open source spaces, I think the better, because the more the merrier when thinking through some of this. And then also the Linden Terms of Service Agreement, we can manage that, but we really can't. Ultimately, Linden owns the space, owns the platform, and does have a role in how we distribute our content. So again, something else to take into consideration as you're using open source technology. What tools am I using to build it? You know, Avimator, who has a say in that? Is this a copyleft thing? Do I owe anything to the creators of the scripting language and all of that. So, but always continue to go through your terms of service agreements and any new updates, because we were really surprised by how things sort of changed even as we were building this project. So, as I mentioned before, some of the... Okay, yeah, sure. We can talk a little bit more about the qualitative space. I do want to give a brief tour of... our space. I don't know.
Is everybody way at the door? Out there.
So,
okay.
We can.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for those of you that might be able to stay. Actually, oh, just one second, just before we take it out. Thank you, though. I appreciate it. Just a few quick acknowledgments. You know, these are everybody's avatars. So, Heather, Dr. Hoke. Dr. Hook, who looks surprisingly like his avatar, Marco Sinelli, Margaret Baim, the clinician for the relaxation response itself, and then Dr. Charles Kavidar, he is the director of the Center for Connected Health. So I do just want to at least leave you with this idea. Boulos over at the University of Plymouth has done a lot of writing about the evolution of virtual environments, and he's... thrown out the important notion that the existing platforms today might not be the platforms that we'll see or the only platforms that we'll see in the future. It's just as it would be similar to thinking that, you know, Microsoft would own the web 10 years from now. And then the McKinsey company, consulting company, you know, they came out with the important statement, which is, you know, virtual worlds, ignore them at your own peril. And although you might not be working in this space, I do believe that what happens in this space is going to greatly affect how people view virtual platforms and 3D environments. So pay attention to what's happening, and definitely feel free to reach out if you have any additional questions. For those of you that are able to stay, I can give a quick tour of the space. If you guys need to head out to class, that's cool too. So thank you for your time. Oh, yeah.